Dr. Arne Buss. Now, he received an undergraduate degree in psychology at Rutgers University and a PhD from Cornell. He's been teaching at the undergraduate and graduate level for over 30 years. His passion is facilitating and teaching classes about interpersonal communication. He works with individuals and couples to resolve their interpersonal communication issues. In the past 8 years, he's given presentations on interpersonal communication skills to a number of organizations in the Monterey area, as well as organizations from San Francisco to King City. He's a distinguished Toastmaster, and in 2011, he was a semifinalist in the Toastmasters World Championship of Public Speaking. Dr. Buss joins us for his segment, Speaking of Listening, on the first and third Thursdays of each month at 5:30. Let's listen to Dr. Arne Buss in Speaking of Listening.
Thank you, Salazar, and welcome to Speaking of Listening on Good Vibrations Radio. I'm your host for this segment, Arne Buss. And Speaking of Listening is all about ways of improving your relationships by listening from your heart. And when I say relationships, I mean all of your relationships, whether it's an intimate relationship, a friendship, an acquaintance, your boss, your subordinate, your colleague, just some person you meet on the street. Relationships are really what makes life worth living, in my view. And communication has repeatedly been put forth as the single most important thing in any relationship. And I will be giving workshops on effective communication and relationship building. For more information, please email me at ahbuss, that's A-H-B-U-S-S, at consciousawareheart.com. That's consciousawareheart, all one word, .com. And remember that listening is not just about what hearing what the other person is saying. It's about engaging them in a dialogue. It's not just sitting there going, but it's really, even if you're not saying anything, it's being energetically involved with that other person. And today, what I'm going to talk about is some of these underlying attitudes that are so important. And I call them attitudes of the skills. And they involve something that goes back a number of years and was called unconditional positive regard, which is basically being okay with the other person and being okay with yourself. Now, the other day, I was working with some young people, and well, they were college age, and that's young to me. And one thing that kept coming up is when they would hear something they disagree with, and they immediately wanted to start expressing that disagreement and convincing the other person that they were wrong. You know, and so that just distills down to the question, and you may have that question as you're listening. Well, what if the other person is wrong? And I'll get to that. But first, I want to talk about the attitude of the skills. And by the skills, I mean the collection of approaches to communication that I've been discussing here. I've mostly been focusing on one aspect of that called tracking, but there's another that I've touched on a little bit in some other segments called impact statements. And the difference is tracking is about listening effectively, listening with empathy, and listening in a way that helps facilitate the other person to express what's going on for them. Whereas impact statements are about expressing your own needs. Again, and those two together are two of the most important elements. Those are the two pillars of this collection of communication approaches called the skills. There are others beyond that, but those are the two most important. So the attitude of the skills, and this goes back to a psychotherapist called Carl Rogers, was his name, is a psychologist, very famous in his day, and he coined the term unconditional positive regard. This was in the mid-1950s, and he adopted that as the centerpiece of his approach to therapy. And the idea is to accept someone by seeing their inherent worth, regardless of what they say or what they do. Again, unconditional positive regard. So he defined this in the context of a therapeutic relationship, because through his experience, he found that as a therapist, adopting this attitude and implementing this attitude in his interactions with his clients seemed to produce the best outcomes. Now, I'm not a psychotherapist, so I certainly can't speak to any of that. And there are many different approaches to psychotherapy, and one can talk about what the effectiveness is or isn't. Again, I am not being a therapist myself. I can't really speak to that. But I can talk about what the core attitude of the skills are in any relationship. And Rogers' concept of unconditional positive regard is absolutely crucial in developing wonderful relationships and developing loving relationships and developing relationships in which each person is free to be themselves and also able to connect with the other person and really have this heart-to-heart connection. See, the opposite of unconditional is conditional. So conditional regard means that I see you as worthy if I, say, agree with what you say or do, or if I agree with your beliefs, or if you're someone who looks nice, or someone that, you know, some that I just generally feel good about. So if I feel good about you, then I'll see you as being worthy. And if I don't feel good about you, then you won't be okay. I'll see you as not being worthy. That's conditional regard. And it means that I don't see where, if I disagree with what you say, if I disagree with your beliefs, I disagree with your religion, if I disagree with your feelings, you know, all of those are ways that I don't see you as being inherently worthy. That's conditional regard. And sadly, that's the way we experience so much of our interactions with others, especially growing up. Having conditional regard for others is the extent to which we have conditional regard for ourselves. In other words, if there's something that I see in you that I'm not okay with, then that means that there's a part of me that I'm not okay with. And in a way, my having conditional regard for you by not seeing you as okay is perhaps my way of distracting myself from something painful that I may feel about myself. It may be a way of just kind of projecting my own issues onto someone else. And so since everything starts with me, the attitude of the skills starts with being okay with oneself. So I hear you asking, well, so how can I be okay with myself? So again, it starts with yourself, and recognize that I can see you as okay. I can see your worth only to the extent that I can see my own worth. So if I see my own worth as being limited, that means that I have to see your worth as being limited. And that also leads to so many problems in relationships, because if I don't have that core of self-worth, that means I'm going to try to get it from somewhere else. And that somewhere else is often someone with whom I'm in a relationship. And that produces a kind of codependence or neediness. In other words, something that I am best able to provide for myself, that sense of self, that unconditional positive regard for myself, I try to get it from you. I try to maybe manipulate you into giving me affirmations or giving me praise. And that just that leads to problems in relationships, because if I'm only worthy if you give me these things, then I'm kind of putting my well-being into your hands. And what if you disagree? What if you don't give me those things? Then somehow I'm lesser. So I can see you as worthy and okay only to the extent that I can see myself as worthy and as okay. And so the attitude of the skills as applied to me, as applied to myself, means accepting myself as inherently valuable and worthy, regardless of anything that I've said or done. And like perhaps many of you, there are things that I've said and I've done in the past that I'm not terribly proud of and I'm not terribly pleased with. And that's one thing. But none of that takes away from my inherent humanity, my inherent worth. And that's true of every other person, regardless of what they've said or done. As horrible as it might be, there is still a core of humanity, a core of worthiness in someone, regardless. Sadly, most of us haven't grown up with this as part of our being. I mean, when we grow up, we've been blamed and shamed and criticized. And, you know, even if we have the most loving parents, then, you know, as imperfect human beings, they'll do and say things to children that cause them to feel blamed or shamed or criticized. You know, as a parent myself, I know that I have done and said things to my children, you know, in the past that I now see were not good for them, that compromised some of their esteem. Because see, children are just open to receiving what they get. And so when they're young and impressionable, how they're treated and how they're spoken to makes such a difference. And it is my fervent wish that parents everywhere learn these skills that I talk about, or something comparable, and apply them in their interactions with their children, so that their children grow up with a stronger sense of self-worth, a stronger sense of their own, you know, inherent worthiness. So the overall message, and even if we have the most wonderful parents, then as soon as we start going to school and encountering other children, then it can just be very brutal. I mean, I don't know how your experience was, but my experience when I was young and in school was, you know, there were some very good parts of that, but then there were some parts where other kids who were bullies or who were, you know, critical or you know, just doing all kinds of things that really damage self-esteem. And looking back on that now, I can see that it was their own esteem that was damaged, that caused them to lash out like that. So I think the hope for the future, the hope for the children is to improve that sense of self-worth, you know, not a prideful sense of, oh, I'm great because I did so well, I'm great because I hit a home run and my team won, but I am worthy just because I'm of who I am. One of the things that I just always loved about Mr. Rogers, and those of you of a certain age will remember him, and if you don't, look for him on the internet or on YouTube, because he just had a wonderful message that he sent to children about how they were inherently worthy. I mean, that was just such a wonderful breath of fresh air in an environment where children are getting messages that they're not okay. So I hear you perhaps, you know, saying, well, okay, I'll buy that. And if not, that's okay too. But if you do buy into this and say, well, how can I work with my sense of self, of conditional self-regard? And I have to say, you know, for myself, this is a work in progress. You know, I'm not 100% there. I still work on it. So what can we do? Now, one of the things is to do inner critic work. That's very valuable, because that's the way that a lot of this criticism and harm to our self-worth that we encounter as we're growing up gets absorbed and implemented in this inner critic, which is this voice inside, which is beating us up, and, you know, oh, you that was so stupid. You're such an idiot. Why do you always do this? If you're silent and you just sort of listen for that voice, you know, you'll hear it. It can be very painful, but there's lots of good work on addressing and dealing with the inner critic. You know, sometimes seeing a counselor or a therapist or see like a life coach or something, those things can be very helpful in terms of building up your own self-regard. And the objective is to work towards more unconditional self-regard so that, just the other day I was recalling something that I had done when I was in my teens, and it wasn't the greatest thing in the world, and there was a part of me that was just kind of cringing a little bit. The key is to not, for me, was to acknowledge, yeah, I did that, and yes, that behavior was not okay, but that doesn't make me not okay. Now, one thing I found is that the skills, particularly tracking, can be a very effective ratchet in this regard. And what I mean by that is that, the ideal way to be skillful is, of course, to begin with this unconditional positive regard. But since for most of us that's a work in progress, that doesn't mean you can't track skillfully. If you track skillfully, that experience, even if it's not full unconditional regard for the other person, that can help build up this muscle, if you will, this muscle for seeing people, myself and the other, with unconditional regard. By tracking, I can build my own unconditional regard, and then with more unconditional regard, I can be more effective tracking. So that's the ratchet effect. So that's being okay with yourself, with myself, and that's the starting point. But now comes the more challenging. Being okay with oneself is actually probably the most difficult work there is. But at least on the face of it, being okay with with another person, especially someone that we're not agreeing with, that can be a big challenge. The thing to understand is unconditional regard does not mean agreeing with the other person. It doesn't mean accepting their behavior. It doesn't mean being nice to them. And above all, it doesn't mean being inauthentic. And that's where the real challenge comes in. In other words, even if I disagree with the other person, even if I'm not okay with the other with their behavior, even if I think that their politics may be just terrible in my view, that does not diminish in any way their unconditional worth as a human being. And that's the key. It's not a matter of being nice, but being authentic. And it's being authentic to recognizing that unconditional worth of that person and every human being. Now, one word that seems to be very popular these days that I really like is the word namaste. Namaste. I don't know if I'm saying it right. And that's a Sanskrit word. It was originally, I believe, from the Hindu. And the one interpretation of it that I've seen that I really like is the divine in me bows to the divine in you. That is so beautiful. The divine in me bows to the divine in you. And that fits so well with what I've been talking about with unconditional positive regard. Because the unconditional positive regard is essentially the same thing except without a religious or spiritual overtone. So even if you don't believe in the divine or any particular specific religious tradition, it's really expressing the same thing. So the divine in me, and this is what I love about namaste, is the divine in me can be seen as an unconditional inherent worth of myself. And bows to the divine in you means acknowledging the inherent unconditional worth of the other person. And so when you say namaste, then to me, it's an explicit acknowledgement of that unconditional worth of both of us. And I just love that, the way that comes across, because it taps into what I've been talking about. So you might be asking, how can I build unconditional regard for another person? And the key to that is to increase empathy and compassion. empathy and compassion. So empathy, you know, it means connecting with and understanding and acknowledging what the suffering of another person is. You know, compassion is really very much the same thing, you know, kind of having compassion for suffering that they may be going through. One thing that I found to be useful is a Buddhist practice of Tonglen, and I'm not a Buddhist. You don't have to be a Buddhist to do this, but it's just, I'm just going to give a very brief overview. If you Google it, I learned about this from a Buddhist nun called Pema Chodron, you know, who writes wonderful books that are really accessible to everybody. And the idea is to connect with suffering. So you begin with empathy for oneself, empathy for your, you know, you think of your own, you connect with your own suffering and you empathize with the fact that you have suffered and that even through the suffering that you're still inherently valuable and worthy. And then you apply the same empathy to, say, someone who's close to you and that you like and have good feelings for. And again, you bring into your mind, you know, what their suffering is, and you develop compassion for the fact that they have suffered. And then you try it on someone who is, again, this is all just in your head, and you're just bringing these things into your mindfulness. You know, someone who's not that close to you, and you like, you know, so again, empathy for what they're suffering. And now it gets challenging. You take someone that you don't like, and you do the same thing. You empathize with the fact that they have suffered. You know, now a lot of times that you can get kind of stuck on that because not liking them or having a conflict with them can get in the way of your being empathetic with them. But the real test of empathy and compassion is how much do you have for people that you don't like. One thing that I found that's helpful is to picture them as an infant. Now, we've all been infants, at least as far as everybody I know has been an infant at one time or another. And picture an infant in your mind. Infants are 100% innocent. I mean, have you ever seen an infant who was evil or bad or I mean, it just doesn't happen. And even when an infant is being annoying, you know, when they're fussing and crying and you nothing you do gets them to stop, what are they doing? Something's not okay with them and they're communicating it as best they know how, and all they know how to do is to cry and fuss. They're 100% innocent. And a phrase of the skills that you hear me say a lot is that when you hear criticism or anger, don't take the blame, hear the pain. Don't take the blame, you're the pain. And in other words, recognize that just as that crying infant was just communicating some pain in the best way they know how, if someone's pointing the finger at you and criticizing or trying to make you wrong, they're really expressing some kind of pain in the best way they know how in that moment. And if you recognize that and you recognize the inherent unconditional worth of them, even in that moment, then that goes so far. Now, as I said, one thing with these young people I was working with that kept coming up is that, well, you know, the conflicts they had, you know, this person is wrong, and I need to, you know, I need to show them how wrong they are. So this is one of the most challenging areas. And to be honest, I sometimes struggle with this the most. If I'm hearing something that's just kind of way out of whack, I mean, supposing someone said something that is just plain wrong, you know, so I hear something, somebody says 1 + 1 = 10. 1 + 1 = 10. What? So how do you react to that? You know, how do we typically react? We disagree. You know, wait a minute. What are you talking about? Everybody knows 1 + 1 = 2. You know, we argue. Yeah, what's the matter? Did you fall asleep during math class? And then we try to prove our position. Look, 1, 1, 2, you know, and we try to disprove their position. You say 1 + 1 = 10. Well, you know, what do you mean? Everybody knows 1 + 1 = 2. Now, even in these factual matters, it generally doesn't convince the other person. In fact, studies have even shown that the more you logically disprove somebody's strongly held position with facts, the more strongly they believe in their position, the stronger they get in, more strongly they get entrenched in it. And what's even worse, you know, so using logic and facts and reasoning doesn't convince the other person. And what's worse is that it will often harm the relationship. I've seen cases where just a simple disagreement often leads to the fracturing of a relationship, and people who just, you know, either don't talk for a while or people who just completely end the relationship. Instead of reacting, track. And I've talked a lot about tracking in other segments, and you can see them on my website under the Speaking of Listening link, where I've archived many of the past episodes. So unconditional positive regard implies that there must be some reason for somebody believing as they do, even if you disagree and even if you think that they're totally wrong. So instead of countering, instead of arguing and disagreeing, be interested and curious. You can enhance the relationship through a deeper understanding of the other person by tracking them and understand, you know, trying to get a sense of, okay, now why do you see it that way? And even at the end of that, even at the end of tracking, you can still disagree. It's your prerogative to disagree. You know, you have a right to your point of view, as and so do they. So what if they are wrong? Well, what, you know, one thing that a phrase I heard from my teacher and that I repeat, if they're wrong, don't make them wrong for being wrong. Don't make them wrong for being wrong. So making them wrong is, you know, criticizing, disagreeing, countering, disproving. Oh, and by the way, just as a little postscript, if you're using binary arithmetic, which is base 2, which is what all computers are based on, 1 plus 1 is 10. So just to recap, I've talked about the attitude of the skills, unconditional positive regard, being okay with oneself, being okay with the other person, and what to do if you think the other person is wrong. Instead of reacting, track. Don't take the blame, track the pain. And until next time, you have been listening to Speaking of Listening on Good Vibrations Radio. I've been your host, Arnie Buss. I so appreciate you joining me today. You can listen to Speaking of Listening every first and third Thursday at 5:35 right here on Good Vibrations Radio. To learn more about effective listening and effective communication in my workshops and facilitations, you can email me at ahbuss, that's A-H-B-U-S-S, at consciousawareheart, one word, .com. ahbuss at consciousawareheart.com. You can like me on Facebook at awareheart or follow me on Twitter at effect5com. That's effect, the number 5, C-O-M-M. And until next time, remember, listen with your heart.